This is MemberCare Media, a media ministry of TWR. Up next, a conversation we believe will be helpful to you. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.
Hello. Pull up a chair and join us for MemCare by Radio. I'm Ted Siemens. My colleague and fellow team member, Susan Feet, joins me as well for our program to finish our talk about coping mechanisms. During recent program episodes, we've been talking about coping mechanisms with the purpose of helping each of us to look at our own lives and behaviors to see if we've taken on some of these diversions from problem solving that often look really helpful, but maybe delaying our problem solving and allowing trouble to get stopped up, leading to some deluge. Like you and I, Susan is an expat living outside her passport country, facing such obstacles as a language that's foreign to her, a culture that's very different from her upbringing, and even different ways of expressing worship, faith, and living out her Christian life. In that sort of context, Susan has been very open with us in sharing about a nervous breakdown she suffered a long time ago. Since talking about that, we've covered a number of topics that we believe can be as preventive medicine, helping you to avoid letting things build up in your own life until it comes to the breaking point. We've been talking about coping mechanisms, things that we do to keep us from actually coping. Today, we'll finish our list of coping mechanisms, and we'll talk about what to do with the awareness we may have gained from this discussion. Susan, over the last series of programs, we've been talking about coping mechanisms, which are ways in which we kind of delay dealing with something, and we might pretend that it's not there, or we might project it onto someone else. Can you give us just a few examples of coping mechanisms?
Yeah, common ones that people would know about are denial, rationalization, where we have good reasons for doing the wrong things, fantasizing, losing ourselves in fantasy, repression, passive aggressive, where we won't confront people directly, but we do things indirectly. We act out. We are just attacking people. Provocation, where we try and get people to have some kind of conflict with us to vent our feelings.
I remember on the last previous program, we talked about performing rituals where someone might actually, they would perhaps spend the whole day getting the shed ready for a big project rather than working on the project.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes there's a very fine line between what is actually delaying. How do we know if we're doing one of these mechanisms or we're actually taking care of something? How do we determine whether we are falling into a coping mechanism rather than just using a different pattern, perhaps, than someone else?
Well, there's three things I can think of. One is coping mechanisms, it's a matter of degree. So, for instance, the guy cleaning out the shed, it's one thing to spend 10 minutes or half an hour getting your workspace clear enough and organized enough so that you can function. It's another thing to spend all day and you don't get to the job. So there's a matter of degree there. So that's one of the things, is how much time. If you're not sure about how much time, ask a family member or ask a coworker. Do you think I spend too much time? And they will have an outside perspective, and they may be able to give you a little different perspective and maybe more impartial perspective. That man's wife knew, it was a coping mechanism.
He was putting something off.
Exactly. He was delaying it. And the third thing is, you can always go to the source of all knowledge and truth and say, Lord, am I doing this? Has this gone beyond something that is an acceptable parameter of this behavior? And have I gone now into a coping mechanism of it? And ask him to search your heart.
We've listed on the last several programs a number of these coping mechanisms. Today, one of the first ones we can talk about has to do with self-harming. How does that look in our lives?
Well, self-harming in an extreme case would be, in my passport country, there are people who will cut themselves. Strangely, it's a way of relieving emotional pain because the physical pain focuses their attention. They don't have to feel the emotional pain. Now, most of us are not self-harming in that kind of a degree. We'll do more what my parents would call when we were growing up, cutting off your nose to spite your face. So let's say, you know, a husband and wife, they have tickets to a special event. They've looked forward to it. Maybe it's a special concert or something, and they've spent money. They're looking forward to, they're going to have this wonderful, special, romantic evening together, and they have a conflict sometime prior to that, and one of them will say, well, just forget it. Now, they really want to go very badly. They don't want to waste the money from that, but they are not willing to engage to resolve that. They just will forget it. So they're willing to hurt themselves in order to hurt the other person.
So in other words, if you put that hurt as more important than dealing with the situation, then you're utilizing that coping mechanism.
Yeah.
Also, another one would be sublimination.
Yeah, that is a really common one too. That's where you're turning your emotional energy into what you would perceive as a more acceptable activity. One of the most common sublimation things, certainly within Christian circles, is eating. I think we've all seen programs where the girl has a breakup and there you see her on a couch with a pint of ice cream. She's sublimating her pain. She's trying to feel good because she has this emotional pain, or they'll refer to eating chocolate and things like that. But it can also carry over into the church. People who are really busy in church activities, they're often looking to feed a need. They are looking for acceptance by God or others. They have the fear of failure. They are subconsciously working off their sin. They're trying to make up for bad thoughts and feelings, that kind of a thing. So that can also be a form of sublimation. And that's very acceptable. We love those busy people in the church, you know, who are
people that accomplish a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
What about trivialization?
Well, trivialization is downplaying something that's important, you know, shrugging it off. It's not really important. So let's say there was a job that you really wanted. And in Christian circles, trivializing would be, well, I guess the Lord didn't want me to have that. Now, it doesn't mean that what you're saying isn't true, but the difference between trivialization and coping would be, coping would say, you know, Lord, I really wanted that job. I really thought you were going to give me that job. I was really suited for it. My hopes were really high, and I am so disappointed that I don't have this. And I'm a little unhappy with you about it, and I don't understand, and I need a job. And so you would express those things. You would be aware of them and you would express them. And then you come to the point of saying, you know, Lord, in spite of all of these things, I know, in spite of how I feel, I know you have a plan for me. And I know this job wasn't for me. And so you've got something that you have planned that's better for me in some way. And I'm going to try to wait patiently for you to bring about what it is that you have for me. So that is the difference. I'm just shrugging it off. I'm not processing my feelings, or I am.
What about using control as a coping mechanism?
Yeah, control isn't literally, I mean, you're not going to find that in a list of coping mechanisms, but control and perfectionism are their own forms of coping mechanisms. They're actually rather closely related. Perfectionists, their control takes the form of, I have to do everything perfectly. And that's part of, I can't really see the negative things about myself. So they're striving very much. And this is something that Christians in particular can fall prey to, because, you know, be ye holy like God is holy. Well, holy isn't perfect, because we can't be perfect. We're supposed to be like him. We're supposed to model him. You know, we're not supposed to sin, but we are. We're not going to be perfect. But that's the ideal set before us. And a lot of people think we have to somehow strive to attain that. And of course we can't, but they're trying to hold it all together and do that. So they're trying to control themselves and their behavior so that they can be perfect and acceptable. And of course it creates great stress, because deep inside we know we're not living up to this idea we've set. But control can also be about controlling the behavior of others, about trying to control circumstances around us. Usually it's rooted in some kind of fear. These are the people in the church, you know, boy, it's their way or the highway. You know, their way is the best way, the only way. It's God's way. It's God's will. And they can be quite forceful in trying to get other people to conform to what they think is how things ought to be done or how people ought to behave. And of course, it's very destructive. You know, God doesn't control us. He says, here's what you should do, and here's your free choice, and I want you to choose to do. And that's the kind of relating that we need to do with other people, too. We provide an example, but freedom for them to go, because we're not always right. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what we have to face.
Susan, we've talked about a lot of different coping mechanisms. How should we be dealing with the problems that we encounter?
Well, the first thing we need to do is we need to be aware. And we've said that over and over and over again, because so many of these are about not being aware. And we've talked about how we should be aware and how we can search our own hearts, how we can invite the Lord to search our own hearts. We can ask trusted people around us, you know, and then we have to be willing to listen, and we can't be dismissive. A lot of being able to cope comes from being in a firm place with our self-esteem. And that has to be rooted in our relationship with God. I am wholly accepted by God, even as I fail, even as I sin, even as I do things that I shouldn't do. I am still wholly loved and accepted. What I do isn't, but I am. And He isn't going to reject me because I have fallen flat on my face yet again today, like I did yesterday, for the same thing. Because He sees the struggle. He knows my heart. I would like to be always in obedience, always doing what is right. I am incapable of it. So that is part of where we have to rest our self-esteem. I am loved by God. I can't do anything to make God love me more. It's impossible. And I can't do anything to make Him love me less.
What's your hope as people listen to the programs about coping mechanisms?
My hope is that it will get them to stop and think and examine their heart and say, you know, I see myself in that, and to understand that it is okay to face those parts of ourself that we don't want to look at, the parts that we think of as ugly and as negative, and they are. Our hearts are dark. We are fallen people. We have negative emotions and negative thoughts and feelings towards other people. We are not what we should be. We're not what we want to be. And that is okay. We are working with the Lord to become that. We can't make ourselves be that on our own.
This feature is a presentation of Member Care Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of Member Care Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.